Sports Radio 99 The Game and the Odyssey app. It is the Dopey Millennial Show. Caleb Johnson here with the final hour of the show. I would just like to say, my timing with that beat drop, you know, sometimes I'm on it, sometimes I'm not. That one,
perfect.
Felt pretty spot on.
Perfect.
Felt pretty spot on. It's nothing like a good beat drop to like just get you going for a segment. You know, I don't know. Sometimes y'all listening out there, you don't know what's going on in the mind of a host, and I am a music-based sports talk host. So you get me a good song to come back from.
Yeah.
Because that's, you know, sometimes, Dom, you come back with a slow song, and I'm just like,
throw it off a little bit, yeah.
If it's not nighttime, I tend to be a little bit like, all right, kind of slowing down the mojo. But you get a good beat drop. I don't know. It just does something for a good sports segment.
Absolutely.
All right. Couple things going on this upcoming week that we definitely, want to put on your attention that may not be because, hey, guess what? You may not be the biggest golf fan, and I get it. I'm not either. But I turn in for the majors. I show up, figure out, wake up a little bit to my golf game. I'm like, who's been playing well as of late? Well, the guys are going to be out at East Lake Golf Club this upcoming week for the Tour Championship. That's the big $40 million prize money that you win the FedEx Cup now if you win the Tour Championship. They changed all the rules and everything, so Scottie Scheffler is not going to start with some ginormous lead like he has the last couple of years. It will be even across everyone to begin the tournament, and a much more fair shot for a guy who, you know, like Colin Morikawa last year, was playing so well, but Scottie just had such a massive lead that he was able to somewhat comfortably walk away with the victory a year ago. Scottie Scheffler is currently right now on the number one on the leaderboard on the final day of the BMW Championship that's being played up at Caves Valley Golf Club in Maryland. He right now is leading by one stroke, it appears, over Robert McIntyre. Why is that important? Because I had seen earlier this week that right now Scottie Scheffler doesn't have his normal caddy. Ted Scott currently is dealing with a family issue, and so his status for the Tour Championship was in question, which made me go like, ooh, all right, if I had to give a favorite, I wouldn't put Scottie because, you know, you just throw off your routine. The guy you're normally talking to keeps you in check, all of those sorts of things. Then that's going to throw you off your game. Well, at least for the moment, Scottie Scheffler leads the BMW Championship with, I think, like 8 holes to play, if I saw that correctly. So clearly, Ted Scott, while, I'm sure does a lot for Scottie, maybe isn't that big of a difference maker, and maybe I should lean into Scottie Scheffler ultimately winning the Tour Championship this upcoming weekend. As a side note, before we get into some NFL news, Dom, this is something pertinent to you and me. Hunter Gaddis is currently on the mound for the Cleveland Guardians. I got to cover Hunter Gaddis at Georgia State.
Yeah.
He was a pitcher for the Panthers baseball team. Really cool when he eventually got drafted by Cleveland and has worked his way up through and is now a bullpen arm for them. Pretty decent bullpen arm, I have to say, for that squad. So it's cool when I'm looking at a guy on television and I'm like, I remember talking to him 10 years ago.
Yeah, something like that.
Oh, wow. All right. That felt weird, Dom. I don't like realizing that, yeah, probably it was 9 or 10 years ago that I was talking to them. Maybe eight, when he was playing for the Georgia State Panthers. Out there, the bus boys squad is what they call them because where they play out in Panthersville is where they keep all of the, well, maybe not all, but a lot of the buses for DeKalb County. And it's just an incredibly, like, ugly area to be playing baseball at. But you find your way through the winding road and you get out there to the fields where eventually they'll be moving and playing at the former Fulton County Stadium.
Nice.
And that
yes.
kind of area mm-hmm. over there in, what are they calling it, Summerhill now? As they
like that, yeah.
revitalized the
changed
area.
So many things.
Dude, it looks so different from when I was in school. And obviously, I mean, that was when the Braves were still playing at Turner Field.
Yeah.
But going over there, I remember it was a few months back that the wife wanted to go to a restaurant in Atlanta that she said. And, or no, yeah, she said Summerhill. She was like, oh, I want to go try this breakfast place in Summerhill. Sure. Sounds good to me. And then we start getting close. And I'm like, wait.
I know this place.
Yeah. I'm turning down Hank Aaron. Like, no, this is okay. I didn't know they had completely redone that area, put up grocery store and yeah, a bunch of apartments and all
totally,
around.
Totally new. Totally yeah. looks completely different.
Absolutely. All right, let's get into some NFL news. This related to a former Georgia quarterback who potentially could be starting in favor of another Georgia quarterback. And I say that a little facetiously, obviously, is Matthew Stafford is dealing with some back injury that clearly is a bigger deal than the Los Angeles Rams are letting on. Last week, when I was hosting my show, we had gotten the report that, oh, Matt Stafford is going to practice on Monday. And then Monday came, and all the reporters in L.A. were like, oh, Matt's still in street clothes. Like, he's not any closer to actually playing in a game. But you know who is playing in a game in the preseason? Stetson Bennett, who thankfully got his life figured out, whatever things were going on with him behind the scenes a year ago. And the man was tearing it up this past weekend when he was 30 of 40 for 323 yards, three touchdowns, and one of those was a go-ahead score as the Rams, who was Rams playing in that preseason game on Friday. I don't have it right in front of me. But just what a crazy like outcome. Oh, it was the Chargers. They get the Rams beat the Chargers 23-22, which, yes, we get it. Preseason scores don't matter. But pretty cool to see Stetson Bennett out there slinging it. And he's kind of for a couple of games now against the Cowboys.
Listen, it's probably going to be a couple more. I mean, I don't. Everything you mentioned it with Matthew Stafford, when I heard he was getting epidurals
yeah.
for his back, I was like, oh, he's not playing week one.
No, I don't feel there is a way. And here's the thing. When your backup option is Jimmy G, yeah, Stetson's probably going to play at some point. Like because
Jimmy ain't going to stay healthy either.
No, he's not going to stay healthy. Like Jimmy G is best served holding a clipboard, looking pretty on the sidelines. Like that is what he is best for. Anytime the expectation is, maybe we will start Jimmy in a game. It's like, all right, you better have your third string ready because it was, what, Jacoby Brissett with the Patriots. Then he goes to the Raiders and, mm-hmm. you know, it's Aiden O'Connell and yep. go down the long Gardner Minshew, you know, who are getting opportunities because Jimmy G couldn't stay healthy. Like, yeah, it's just been.
We were talking about betting earlier. Can I bet on how many games Stetson Bennett will start this year? Because I'm sure that's a low number. And
would,
I feel like he might smash that over.
Would it be, would they set it at 1.5?
Probably would be like, it'd be like half. If they
a half, yeah,
a half probably.
Okay,
half or 1.5.
Yeah, that's what I'm because I'm thinking. I mean, the Matthew Stafford thing feels like here's how I see this playing out. Dom, he's not gonna play week one. They will start Jimmy G, and then it'll go bad with Jimmy G, and they'll go, hey Matt, get some Toradol, whatever
yeah,
you need.
Yeah.
Shoot it up in your back and let's go out here and let's play some football. He'll play, he'll get re-injured, and he'll go set amount of time yeah. having to miss some games.
Well, that's the thing, too, and I can't remember. It was either Mark Schlereth or Brian Baldinger who said this one time, and it always stuck with me when they were talking about back injuries. And they said, I never met someone who used to have back problems.
Yeah.
It's kind of one of those things where once your back starts acting up, it's just kind of going to be a problem for the rest of your
yeah.
life. It never really goes away. And that's what's so concerning about this to me for Matthew Stafford, especially at this point in his career.
And that's for people who don't get hit
every day for
yeah,
a living.
For a
right.
living. Like that's for just people who are out here, you know, making sure they get up from their office chair enough and take enough walks and things like that, that it's still going to be a problem, much less taking hits from some of the, you know, best athletes in the world. And that's
Nick
what
Bosa twice a year or something like that.
Oh, man. It's going to be interesting out in L.A. because, I mean, that's a team that certainly has some high expectations. And Matthew Stafford was a big part of that.
Listen, if they're healthy, I think they're the biggest threat to the Eagles in the NFC.
Sure.
I think so.
I can see it.
I think if they're healthy, that team, listen, they were the toughest. They played them the toughest in the postseason last year. They damn near beat them in that first round. So I think if the Rams are healthy, they're a serious contender. It's just Matthew Stafford's health is a huge question mark.
Yeah. How does Puka Nacua step up as he continues to grow? No Cooper Kupp. All of those sorts of things are kind of question marks around this team that it feels like, Dom, I will say this. It feels like this is a team who could give the Eagles a run for their money and could also be drafting in the top 10 next year because it could sway, you know, heavily one way or another based on a lot of it around quarterback play. All right, a couple other things I want to get into in NFL news. Look, you're getting to a point, you know, we don't have time. I will talk about Jackson Dark real quick before we go to break. The other one we'll save for news you can lose because it involves some sound because, of course, you know, weird things get said in Cleveland. But in New York, Jackson Dart also has been one who has been tearing it up in the preseason, getting a lot of attention. He was a guy coming out of Ole Miss that I feel like I was higher on him than a lot of people were, just simply because I feel like when the pressure was on, this was the part that concerned me. When the pressure was on for Jackson Dart, I feel like he didn't live up to that potential, especially, and more so his team in Ole Miss didn't. And that, you know, could you blame that on Lane Kiffin? A number of different reasons. But when the expectations were low, when no one expected much to come out of Ole Miss and specifically Jackson Dart, I feel like he showed up and, you know, played a lot of really good college games. I think what we've seen from him in the preseason, obviously you can carry this on with every preseason of, you know, you're dealing with a lot of backups and all of that sort of a thing. But to play as well as he has through the preseason, I am very concerned that the Giants will mess this thing up because, in my opinion, Jackson Dart should not see the field in 2025. You've got Russell Wilson and Jameis Winston. And the fact that on the Giants' most recent depth chart, they put Jackson Dart number 2 and Jameis Winston number 3 makes me think that they're going to overthink
though.
This.
That's what happens when you have a desperate head coach and a desperate GM that know we got to find a way to
get fired.
Yeah.
Oh, man. It's I'm just so thankful the Falcons don't find themselves in that sort of a position. All right, on the other side of the break, coming up 3 minutes from now, we're going to talk with AJC beat reporter covering the Atlanta Hawks, Lauren Williams. The Hawks signed a new player, or at least gave him an offer sheet. How is this going to change the roster, as well as does an extension get done with Trae Young? We'll talk about it next. Caleb Johnson here with you on Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. It is the Dopey Millennial Show. Caleb Johnson here with you on this Sunday afternoon, getting close to wrapping up the show, and the Braves are getting close to wrapping up a win in Cleveland that would hopefully be a sweep over the Guardians. Want to change the conversation, though, to talk about the Atlanta Hawks because, yes, we are in the offseason, but moves are being made, things are happening, schedules are being released, and there's no one better to talk about it than my friend Lauren Williams, who is the beat reporter covering the Hawks for the AJC. So we'll go out to the Wade4.com hotline and bring in Lauren. Lauren, how you doing on this Sunday? And am I talking to you on PTO?
Not anymore.
Okay.
I mean, I'm officially off PTO today, so
all right,
we are all good.
I'm glad because you mentioned you were on PTO, and I was like, obviously you're a friend, so I'm not surprised that you would say yes, but I was like, man, I hope I'm not bothering her when she's, getting some much deserved time off, especially in what is normally, you know, pretty quiet part of the off season, not much movement happening. But Ansi Soleil kind of still making moves and doing things in a very, dare I say, sneaky way in this this new signing, Lauren, because we got the report that came out. Michael Scotto puts out the report that the Atlanta Hawks are putting an offer sheet out. It's my understanding it's the first time a two-way player has been given an offer sheet to Nafali Dante, as I believe how his name is pronounced, but a big man who was playing with the Houston Rockets and in the G League. What do you kind of make of Ansi going out and getting a big like this in a point where the clearly, you know, the Hawks need some depth there?
Absolutely. I think you just kind of hit the nail on the head there. They're adding some depth to the front court. I mean, how many times in a season, Caleb, have you and I and Jamila Johnson and Brad Rowland and Kevin Shinar kind of bemoaned the lack of depth that they've had at center or power forward or wherever it is. But this season, it just seems like they've kind of fleshed out that front court, especially at the four and the five, where they've historically just struggled to kind of field guys, if you will, or put guys on the court on any given night. And we're seeing weird lineups and everything like that. But this season, it does seem like the Hawks truly do have a team that has, you know, as many pieces as possible that, you know, you don't have to think about this, well, when they're healthy, you know, thought process. They have a team that, you know, could potentially go out, compete every night. And, you know, you're expecting some big things from some of those young guys, that there won't be that sort of drop off if a Jalen Johnson gets hurt. And I'm not saying that, you know, the team has another Jalen Johnson, but I do think that they have a little bit more versatility on the roster, that Quinn Snyder can, you know, put out different types of lineups if they need that. But, you know, I think things are looking good. And to add another five, you're not putting yourself in a pickle necessarily to have to play Moge at the five and have to kind of split him between the four and the five, even though he does give you some solid minutes at the five, more so than the four. But just based on everything, I know that the Hawks say that Moge is a basketball player, and that's just kind of how they view him. But by all accounts, we've just seen them kind of positioning him as a four. So to have another guy that can back up, you know, Kristaps Porzingis and Onyeka Okongwu, Asa Newell at the five, you know, it just speaks to the things that this team is kind of valued a little bit more. And I wouldn't necessarily use the word sneaky. I would just more so use the word quiet, as far as just some of the moves that Ansi Soleil has done this offseason.
Well, I guess I thought sneaky just for the simple fact of
we thought they were done.
Well, yes, certainly. And then I think it was, you know, our mutual friend Keith Smith of Spotrac was putting it out that the Rockets essentially don't have enough cap space because of where they at and the luxury tax to be able to sign, because the Hawks have offered Nafali Dante a 2-year, $4.5 million deal. And essentially, you know, the Rockets can't keep up with that. And so it feels like one of those sorts of things that I'll ask you in this way, is Ansi pulling off a move like this, do you think that could potentially hurt him in any way in the future when he's making, you know, other deals? Because he kind of he takes from a team that he knows can't do anything about it, or is this just good business?
I think it's just good business. You're identifying teams that don't have cap space to make things possible, and you look at what he did with Boston and you know, taking on Kristaps Porzingis and the Hawks having, you know, something to potentially negotiate with Kristaps in the future, whether that's him playing for another contract or, you know, moving on from him when this 1-year deal or 1 year left on that deal that he made with Boston is over. So I think it's just business. You're just watching what other teams are doing in the league. You're keeping yourself informed in terms of what they can and cannot do. And I think other teams do the same exact thing. So I think it's just good business that he's well informed. He's surrounded himself with the right people that understand everything that's going on around the league so that he can make moves that will benefit the Hawks potentially in the long term. We have no idea how this will actually end up shaking out, whether you know, the center that they just signed will work out long term, or if this is just sort of a temporary deal that, you know, there are restrictions in place that allow them to have the flexibility, you know, next season. So I do think it's just good business practice. It just shows that he's looking at all of the moving parts and is not getting sort of tunnel vision, whether that's him himself or the people that he surrounded himself with.
Let's switch gears real quick from the NBA to Eurobasket, and I won't get into specifics because we're just kind of fans and we want to see guys who are related with the Hawks do well and all of those sorts of things. But I'm curious your thoughts when it comes to, seeing a guy like Kristaps Porzingis playing for Latvia, getting that opportunity seems really cool. Obviously, guys want to play for their country, and I fully understand knowing the injury history that Kristaps has had as recent as this past season with the Celtics. Any concerns because we've seen Bogey in the past, you know, play for his country in the Olympics and all that sort of thing. Any concern with a guy like Kristaps Porzingis playing, additional basketball before heading into the NBA season?
No, not really any concern, just because Kristaps has said himself to me in several other interviews that he did kind of on the circuit before he went and joined up with Team Latvia, that he tends to play his best hoops, you know, when he's able to play for his country throughout the summer. And so we saw what happened in the last Eurobasket competition. He went off and played really well for the Wizards the following season. He had the same situation happen after, you know, he signed with Boston, and playing that summer, he did really well, came into Boston, helped to get them to a championship. So I think Hawks fans can be, you know, a little bit excited about what's potentially to come after he plays this summer. Obviously, I think the team will be mindful of his minutes, and so that's how they try to mitigate any injury risks that come up, or that could potentially come up, But I do think that when guys are able to play throughout the summer, that it in some ways might help to kind of relieve any potential injuries, just because your body isn't going from 0 to 100, where you have that sort of short preseason and then all of a sudden you're playing regular season basketball. So I think the big thing is that, you know, the talks, training staff and performance staff are just going to have to be right on top of him in terms of making sure that his body is in the right place and that everybody's communicating in a way that's honest and, setting themselves up for success, as opposed to some of the things that we've, you know, heard or seen come out of front offices around, or not front offices, but performance teams around the NBA.
All right, talking with Lauren Williams, beat writer, covering the Atlanta Hawks for the AJC. We saw the schedule get released this past week, which obviously, you know, a lot of fans start looking for nationally televised games. How many of those is your team getting? And when I saw 13, it was like, oh, man, all right, the NBA really believes in the Atlanta Hawks, and they want to put them in primetime a lot. And then you start seeing, you know, the 30s and, you know, that some of the other teams are getting because of, I mean, the NBA, it feels like it's going to be on television, on national television, like, every day of the week, it feels like, to some extent.
Pretty much.
Of these new streaming deals that are happening. I will say, seeing, I think it's Positive Residual is the social media page that has gone through and looked at metrics of essentially, you know, strength of schedule and all those sorts of things that team will face. And the Hawks have the third easiest schedule, according to Positive Residual. Once the schedule came out, you see they begin the year with Toronto, all of that sort of thing. Kind of, did it change your expectations of what you think we'll see from the Hawks this season, barring everybody stays healthy?
Not at all. I think that regardless of what the strength of schedule for the Hawks would be, I anticipated that they would still be a much better team than they were last season. And that team really did surprise us early out of the gate. And then it kind of, you know, obviously the wheels kind of came off a little bit toward the end of the year. But I do think it helps a little bit to have a so-called easier strength of schedule. But I think the thing with the NBA is that everything will look a certain way on paper, and then when it becomes reality, it's completely different than what people sort of anticipated. You look at a team like the Lakers that started one way. They had Anthony Davis to start the beginning of the season. They get Luka, and then LeBron gets hurt despite that, and they still kind of fall short in their postseason run after making sort of that big trade. So I just think it's hard to for me to even really take this idea of the strength of schedule so seriously right sure. now, just because there's so many moving parts throughout the NBA season. And then when you actually see what teams look like together, it looks totally different than what you kind of thought about on paper. I mean, you kind of look at the W in a way when they got Brittany Griner, but heck, the Dream are, what, second in the league right now, and you have the reigning champs kind of on their heels. You wouldn't have anticipated that even with the move to get Brittany Griner. So I do think when you look at how things actually shake out, it's then that you can kind of really sort of make an opinion about what the expectations are for this team. I think you usually use the metric, what, like 20 games in is when you kind of get a real sense of who a mm-hmm. team is. And that's kind of what I'm waiting to see, just because, again, this is kind of a totally different team than even the one that we saw last season.
That's Lauren Williams, beat reporter covering the Atlanta Hawks for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. You can follow her on social media at WilliamsLaurenL. Lauren, always appreciate you coming on the show, and especially when you're, you know, kind of coming off some vacation time. It's time to get back to the grind and get ready for a season.
Exactly. And I'm really looking forward to it, just because I'm really intrigued to see, you know, what the actual lineups are going to be. Obviously, Quinn Snyder often says it's not about who starts, it's about who finishes the game. Yeah. And it'll be interesting to see if there's a little bit more flexibility in the rotation than we've seen over the last couple of years.
Can't wait to debate Kristaps Porzingis versus Onyeka Okongwu. It's coming, Lauren. We're just a little, 1,000%. Little bit of time away. All right. Yep. That is Lauren Williams. Like I said, give her a follow on social media at WilliamsLaurenL. On the other side of the break, 4 minutes away, we'll wrap the show up with news you can lose. Taylor Swift did her first podcast this past week, and did she give an Easter egg of a future performance? We'll talk about it next. It's the Dopey Millennial Show, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, and the Odyssey app. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. It's the final segment of the Dopey Millennial Show. Caleb Johnson here with you. And what did I say earlier in the show? Like a good music, like, will absolutely just change how you're feeling, change the direction of a segment, and that bed music, in my opinion, the best track on the new Clips album. That's just my personal opinion. But I just felt like everyone was at such an elite level, and the way that Tyler, the Creator, came in
album is
to
incredible.
POV. Yeah, I mean, just wow. That's why Dom, when was that? Was that last week or the week before? They're starting to blend together now. But to be at JID's essentially album release party is essentially what that turned into. And him playing the album, and I hear Clips, and I'm like, what? Like, you at the height of Clips, of their, you know, resurgence, you got them on your album? Insane. Absolutely insane. I still think God Does Like Ugly is album of the year, but, you know, I'm a little biased because I am a JID stan. So that's and I admit it, and I fully am aware, you know, the Atlanta bias and all that sort of things. But I mean, Clips, what an album to put out, especially just after like so long away, essentially as a group. Anyways, always like to end the Dopey Millennial Show in the same way, by first getting into news you can lose. All right, this past week, a podcast that I'm a big fan of, just because it's fun, because they get into football, but then they also just get into regular life, and it's silly. New Heights podcast with Travis and Jason Kelsey. has been successful for quite some time, and they get a lot of really great guests on it. However, they teased their new episode that came out this past Wednesday by putting the silhouette of a particular person, and the Swifties are so crazy that they figured out within like a matter of hours the photo. Like, people were like, oh, I think it's Taylor Swift. And the Swifties were like, oh, we found the photo that they used. Yeah, it's for sure Taylor Swift. And then, shocker, it was Taylor Swift who was announcing her new album, Life of a Showgirl, I think is the name of the album.
That's correct. Yep. Yeah. Life of a Showgirl.
Which, cool, great for her. I don't like her music, but that's just me personally.
I liked it back when she was a country artist. You know, I like the old stuff.
Yeah, like she had...
He wears short shorts, or she wears right, short shorts. Yeah. I wear sneakers.
Yeah, like she had some catchy ones back in the day. All of the new stuff just feels very moody and nothing that I can like really just listen to. It's not really as poppy as it used to be, I guess.
She sounds like a 30-year-old woman making music for 15-year-olds. It's okay, you can say it.
Yeah, that really is it, Dom. That really is it. But I mean, look, her fans love her. The tour was a whole big deal. The thing that I want to get into is I thought it was really bizarre how this was the first podcast that Taylor Swift has ever done. She does not deal with the media. And, you know, kudos to her for having as successful of a career and trying to stay out of the limelight and just not feeling the need to talk other than talking through her music. But she goes on her boyfriend Travis Kelce's podcast because, you know, kind of successful. And it feels like a best of both worlds, you know, to bring in a little Hannah Montana name drop there. But she goes on the podcast. She starts talking about sourdough bread a whole lot of like, this is a thing that she's gotten into. And me, who is sitting there because my wife really wanted to watch the episode because she, you know, wants to stay up with pop culture and all that sort of thing. And I was going to tune in just because I enjoy Travis and Jason, but Taylor Swift keeps talking about sourdough bread throughout the episode and how she, you know, and I was like, oh, Taylor's trying to relate and come across as just an average 30-year-old who, you know, during COVID when we were all locked in our houses.
5 years late to the sourdough conversation. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. So it was like while everyone during COVID, you know, was locked in their houses and couldn't go anywhere and, you know, we're doing the sourdough starter and making bread, she could still fly on jets and go anywhere she wanted because, you know, she had money like that, and now has started to catch up with the sourdough trends, the more common American type of persona. Or was it a bit of an Easter egg of an upcoming performance? You had Jessica Benson of Grind City Media. This was the first time that I saw this, but a lot of people have now run with this whole theme of, did Taylor drop an Easter egg by talking about sourdough?
I don't think Taylor Swift is actually baking sourdough bread. I think it was an Easter egg. Where is the Super Bowl this year?
You told me during the break, it's in Santa Clara, Levi's, where the Niners play.
Niners play. Who's the Niners mascot?
Sourdough Sam!
Sourdough Sam. Sourdough Sam. She said she's thinking about sourdough 60% of the time. When she's going on and on about sourdough, how much sourdough she's baking, 60% of the time, it's Super Bowl 60 in Levi Stadium, home of
sourdough
Sam.
She is going to do the Super Bowl.
I think she's doing the Super Bowl.
She is going to do the Super Bowl.
Yeah, so this is the thing about Swifties that, like, they go into conspiracy mode so quickly over things. And a lot of the times, they're right, because one of the things that Taylor Swift talked about was the end of her Eras tour, the final stop, I think was in Vancouver. And she, instead of dropping through the floor, she walked through an orange door. And her new album, Life of a Showgirl, is orange themed. And like, that's the color of it. So that was her Easter egg of a new album. And so then she brings up, and I thought it was the 60% of the time was the weird part, where Taylor is talking about, yeah, 60% of the time I'm thinking about sourdough. And I was like, who talks like that? So I wouldn't necessarily be surprised. Like, this has been something in the past that Taylor Swift has never been connected to the Super Bowl because of one very clear reason. Because it used to be sponsored by Pepsi, and she is sponsored by Coke. And so because the Coca-Cola Pepsi clash, she was never going to be in the Super Bowl. And then Jay-Z took over with Apple Music. And listen, Jay-Z was like, hey, let's look at the history of Super Bowl halftime performances. Hadn't been a whole lot of people who look like me. And he started getting more, you know, hip hop artists and things of that nature involved with a halftime show, which there's a lot of you out there that haven't loved it, but it's been popular. And I mean, going and getting Kendrick last year was an extremely popular choice. I think this would be a good time for Taylor to do the halftime performance. So yeah, mentioning the 60, mentioning the sourdough for Sourdough Sam, here is one last reason why it could technically, or she might have dropped another Easter egg tied into the simple fact of she's doing the halftime show in Levi Stadium.
Okay, there's another one too. There's another piece of this. She said, specifically, thank you for screaming for 47 seconds for me. 47 seconds could be a connection to her Eras Tour stop at Levi Stadium was her 47th stop on the Eras Tour.
What are we doing, guys? What are we doing? Like the fact that it would
what
be...
What we do. I love it.
The fact that it would go that deep is... It's both annoying and really creative at the same time.
I was going to say, as someone who loves a good conspiracy theory every once in a while, I can appreciate the level of depth that goes into like making the connections. And I'll even give Ms. Benson her props here. It doesn't seem like too much of a stretch.
No, it really doesn't. It really feels like this is a thing that could truly happen. And honestly, I would have to imagine right now that Taylor Swift is the betting odds favorite to be the halftime performer at Super Bowl 60. It's going to be played out in Santa Clara at Levi Stadium. Just wild that she would weave that into her first podcast. But, I mean, this is the same woman who was talking about how big of a fan she was when the Chiefs drafted Xavier Worthy. And, like, she's just trying to make herself ingratiated with the football world, who, as she joked, it was like, oh, yeah, this is what football fans want more of, is to see me. It's like she gets the... you know, what's being said behind the scenes, even if she claims to not be involved on social media and all that sort of thing. I just, I had to bring this up because I was like, wow, that would actually be wild and just really creative. And at least in my opinion, in a pretty annoying way. All right, let's wrap this up with giving out a participation trophy. I'm going to give my participation trophy to Dylan Gabriel of the Cleveland Browns. Why do I, feel the need to give out Dylan Gabriel's participation trophy? Well, because the Cleveland Browns have announced today they are going to announce their starter at some point ahead of their final preseason game so that the final preseason game can be a dress rehearsal. Will it be Dylan Gabriel? No. It's either going to be, which it's going to be Joe Flacco. Like, let's just say that. It's either going to be Joe Flacco or it's going to be Shedeur Sanders. It's not going to be Shedeur because Shedeur's is hurt right now, which I think hurt his chances of having that opportunity in game one. I never really thought Shedeur was going to start game one, but, you know, certainly if he played well enough in the preseason, it's also Cleveland, so they could do anything. The other aspect of this, though, is Dylan Gabriel. He was drafted in the third round ahead of Shedeur Sanders, and when he was asked yesterday by sideline reporter Adetai Kinkwabwala? I am butchering that name horribly.
Aditi Kinkwabwala.
Okay, thank you. Wow, I said that so wrong?
I only know it because she covers like all of the AFC North.
Okay.
So she covers
Aditi
Kinkwabwala.
Aditi Kinkwabwala.
Mm-hmm.
Got it. She was on the sideline for the NFL, for the Cleveland Browns, interviewing Dylan Gabriel after he was done with his performance in the preseason. And when she asked him, you gave us some fabulous words of wisdom on how you tune out the noise and don't let it infiltrate yourself. Share that with everyone at home. This is what Dylan Gabriel had to say.
It's just part of it. You know, there's entertainers and there's competitors. And I totally understand that. And my job is to compete. And that's what I'm focused on doing. Of course, we're doing this mid-game. But, you know, it's something that I'll get used to. And just want to be the best team that I can and create an environment where we can all go do our best work. That's all we want to do.
There's entertainers and there's competitors. Now, of course, the context being, well, this is what Aditi asked him of, you know, some fabulous words of wisdom on how you tune out the noise and don't let it infiltrate yourself. You're telling me that he was asked words of wisdom, and his words of wisdom happen to be there are entertainers and there are competitors? Nah, bro. Like, this feels real icky, and it feels very specific to your fellow rookie teammate, Shedeur Sanders.
Absolutely.
Like, I am one who I don't like a lot of the noise that has been around Shedeur, because a lot of people, I think, are making concessions and caveats to Shedeur, and, oh, he's not getting a fair shot, and, oh, he's being blackballed, and all this and all that. He's not being blackballed because he wouldn't have been drafted if that was the case. And then he's being given a fair shot for a fifth-round pick, but he didn't help himself by getting hurt. And, like, that just happens. That's just football. But Dylan Gabriel saying this, yeah, buddy, take this participation trophy because you're not starting, and that's as much of an award as you're getting for this season. Because what a dumb thing to say, because that really feels like you're making an attack on your teammate. That'll do it for my time on the Dopey Millennial Show. Shout out to producer Dom Chorosky on the other side of the glass. Thank you, sir, for the last 3 hours. Coming up next, Grant McCauley and From the Diamond. This has been Caleb Johnson on the Dopey Millennial Show, Sports Radio 99.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.